Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, we're seeing some sunlight break through the clouds.
Welcome, everyone, to the On Poly podcast. I'm Steve Paikin.
And I'm John Michael McGrath.
Some good news for small business owners. Non-essential businesses will be allowed to reopen. Sort of. Ontario is lifting some of the restrictions which have been in place since Boxing Day as new COVID variants loom over the province. On the pod today, we'll discuss details. Plus, a special look back at the 50th anniversary of one of the most important and craziest moments in Ontario political history. It's Tuesday, February 9th, 2021, so let's get to it. Parts of Ontario are now going to be allowed to reopen for business, but only parts. And here's my pal JMM with all the details. Go ahead, JMM.
Sure. So probably the most significant thing about the Monday announcement we got from the Premier at Queen's Park is that it's quite narrow, and I almost want to say cautious. I think some people were expecting a more enthusiastic opening. But as of 12:01 a.m. Wednesday, three of the province's 34 public health units will no longer be subject to the stay-at-home order. Those are the Kingston Public Health Unit, Renfrew, and Hastings Prince Edward. Next week, another 28 public health units, these regions in Ontario, are going to be removed from the stay-at-home order. That's as of February 16th. And then finally, Toronto, Peel, and York will continue to be under the stay-at-home order until Monday, February 22nd. So, as I say, I actually was kind of surprised at how narrow this reopening was. I think it gives us a sense that the government is taking things a bit more cautiously.
Well, just to be clear here, is it back to business as usual for those regions that are allowed to reopen?
You know, if people remember back before the stay-at-home order, before the government declared a second state of emergency, we were operating under that color-coded regional framework. So, you know, regions could move from green to orange to red to gray being the lockdown phase. So effectively, as the state of emergency is lifted, we are just heading back to that system with some changes around the edges. But the three regions that are moving out of the stay-at-home order this week are going back to green, which was the most permissive state in the framework. But that's not guaranteed for every region that comes out of the lockdown. For example, you know, Toronto and Peel were in the gray lockdown phase before we went into the stay-at-home order. So I suspect that we're going to see regions come out of the stay-at-home order and go into different stages of alert, so to speak. It just happens to be that these three regions that are where the stay-at-home order is being lifted this week also happen to be three regions that have done really particularly well over the last year keeping COVID at bay. So they are going back to green.
Well, let's make a distinction there between that and the regional framework that you talked about earlier. What does that involve?
Yeah, the government introduced some changes to the framework. And I mean, this has been, I think, constant since they introduced the framework. They've been tinkering with some of the restrictions. So, for example, now when a region is in the gray or lockdown condition, that's the most restrictive one, short of, I guess, the stay-at-home order that we're currently under. They are limiting store occupancy for 25% for any stores that aren't grocery stores or pharmacies. That read one way, that is, I think, more permissive in some ways. But one of the tweaks that we saw in the language that was released on Monday is that the stores that are primarily about selling groceries or pharmacy goods will be allowed to stay open at 50% capacity. And I think, I haven't had time to check this as we record, but I believe what we're seeing is a response to some of the anger about big box stores being allowed to stay open. You know, Costco and Walmart being able to say that because they sell groceries, they are able to, you know, adhere to all the rules of grocery stores. The way I'm reading this, I think they are going to be now subject to a tighter limit. And the other interesting little change that they really emphasized at Monday's press conference is that they are adding something to the regional framework overall, which is going to give the government, and in this case, it's going to be the chief medical officer of health, the power to move a region all the way from, let's say, green, the most permissive stage, all the way to lockdown instantly if they see a sudden spike in COVID numbers, especially if they see one of the so-called variants of concern, you know, the UK variant, the South African variant, the Brazilian variant, if they see those really surge in an outbreak, a region could very, very quickly find itself in lockdown.
A bunch of things to follow up from there, because you mentioned Costco and Walmart. And I think the policies around those have caused a great deal of consternation in the province. And I feel somewhat justified in saying that, because I see the Canadian Federation of Independent Business today, when it heard about the changes, came out with a press release that said this. It said, "This will finally end the bizarre and ineffective Ontario-only policy of allowing big box stores to sell in person while barring small firms from doing the same." I think, JMM, there were a lot of people who couldn't figure out why the small businesses had to be closed and potentially go out of business altogether. But people were allowed to cram into the bigger businesses, apparently, with no difficulty whatsoever. Anyway, be that as it may, we're now in a situation where, for example, our listeners in Kingston could be happily living their lives in their green status. But if Dr. David Williams, the chief medical officer of health, sees a sudden big spike in cases, he's not just going to move Kingston slowly through all the color codes. He can just jump in there and go all the way to lockdown all at once. Is that it?
That's right. And, you know, I think this is an important detail, and I want to stick on it just for a bit, because I think it's a sign that the government's thinking on the pandemic is changing, at least a little bit. The regional framework, you know, it has been emphasized to us really from the beginning, from when they introduced it last summer. You know, this is about predictability. This is about, you know, people anywhere in Ontario being able to get a sense of what they are allowed to do. And by not changing it, you know, hugely, and by telling citizens that things are not going to change that quickly, people get a sense of they can plan their lives. And, you know, at least as much as any of us can plan in a pandemic. And I think that's understandable. And I think it's come from a good place, an intent to be clear with people. But now they've added this emergency break, they're calling it. And I think one of the reasons we're seeing that is because we have seen time and again, and we saw it at Christmas, which is why we had the stay-at-home order, that COVID-19 can move faster than government. And so as I read this, they are giving themselves this power to you know, turn the knob all the way to 11 at once, because I think they are starting to think less about being predictable and, you know, giving people time to plan, and more about just needing to really absolutely hammer outbreaks when and where they happen. We are going to need to see if they actually use this power that they have given themselves. That's not always been something that they have done. But I do think that they are really taking things more seriously, maybe not as seriously as some of their critics would like to see. But I think this is a noteworthy moment.
Nice Spinal Tap reference there, dude. Were you even alive when that movie came out?
I don't believe I was, no.
You want to come up with some cultural reference points from your own generation and stop stealing mine then?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Back on track here. The province's latest state of emergency expires this week, though, I think. So how's the government keeping the stay-at-home order in place if the state of emergency is, in fact, over?
It wouldn't be an episode of our podcast if I didn't get at least into a little bit of the legal weeds here.
You are correct about that, yeah.
But you are quite correct. The state of emergency technically ends on February 9th. But part of the emergency law that the government has been relying on since last March to declare these states of emergency, it also lets them extend orders that are made under the declaration for up to 14 days after the state of emergency ends. So that is how Toronto will stay under an emergency order for 2 weeks, even though the emergency itself, legally speaking, is going to end on February 9th.
I am very glad you clarified that, because I really would have been up all night wondering, how do they have the legal authority to do this when the state of emergency is over? But now you've explained it and I can sleep peacefully.
And I want you sleeping well at night, Steve.
Thank you. I'm glad you care so much about my sleeping habits. That's a delightful thing. Well, one other thing before, we're not going to leave this subject yet, because I can't help but notice that none of the three regions moving out of the stay-at-home order are in the north, despite the fact that Northern Ontario has been relatively lightly touched by COVID-19 throughout this pandemic. Any idea why?
It's certainly true that no northern region in the province has the kind of COVID numbers that Toronto or Peel have, either in absolute or per capita terms. But you do see outbreaks happening around Northern Ontario all the same, including in Thunder Bay and in the northeast around Timmins and Kapuskasing. And also there's now one that seems to have raised some alarm bells in North Bay. Some of these outbreaks are connected to correctional centers, but not all of them. And so I think the government is waiting a bit longer to see if those numbers get under control.
I noticed the other day as well, the new variant, which has got everybody so concerned, has been found in the north. So I'm guessing that would have something to do with it as well.
Yeah. The Minister of Health, Christian Elliott, said at Monday's briefing that the province is tracking cases of these so-called variants of concern in both North Bay and Timiskaming. There are also, of course, variants in southern Ontario. But when we're talking about why the state of emergency, or rather why the stay-at-home order hasn't been lifted in Northern Ontario yet, these variants of concern, the so-called UK variant, the Brazilian variant, the South African variant, these are really, you know, setting off alarms for public health professionals, and they've been spotted in the north, and the north doesn't really have the healthcare capacity to deal with, you know, these really alarming outbreaks the same way the south does. So they're just going to keep a lid on things for a little bit longer.
Okay, let's do a little update on something else that we've been talking about over the last few weeks, and that is paid sick days. This has become an issue of some controversy at Queen's Park. There have been people asking for the province to institute some sort of paid sick day policy. The province says it's a federal responsibility and would duplicate a federal program that already exists, so that's why they don't want to do it. Last week, Carla Qualtro, Canada's Minister of Employment, Workforce Development and Disability Inclusion, how's that for a title? She responded to those claims. So where are we at in all this now?
So, yes, the context here is that Premier Doug Ford and his Labour, Training and Skills Development Minister, Monty McNaughton, have both argued that extending paid sick leave to Ontario workers would be redundant right now, since the feds have created a benefit program to help people get by if they get sick with COVID-19. It is called the Canada Recovery Sickness Benefit, and it provides $500 a week for up to 2 weeks for people who need it. So what Minister Qualtro said last week was basically that as far as Ottawa is concerned, there is no redundancy. The CSRB would work just fine with paid sick leave if Ontario or any other province wanted to implement that. I think her words were, it is complementary, not exclusive. So as far as Ottawa is concerned, they could both go forward together.
That doesn't seem to be enough incentive for Queen's Park to want to move on this, though, right?
No, not yet. We haven't seen any motion from the government. The opposition has proposed amending Ontario's employment law, but still no joy from the government.
Okay. Let's mention some numbers here, JMM, that underline this, because Peel Region, right, just west of Toronto, it's a manufacturing hub. It's also had some of the highest COVID-19 case counts in Canada. Peel Public Health put out a survey at the end of January. They surveyed 8,000 people if they had gone to work sick. And how about this? A quarter of the people surveyed said, yes, they had. 1% even said, I went to work even after getting a positive COVID-19 test. That can't be good. Now, if both the federal and provincial governments say paid sick days aren't their responsibility, where does that leave the rest of us mere mortals?
I mean, one thing I want to say about that Peel Public Health survey is that, if anything, it probably understates the problem, because I mean, just imagine you are a low-wage worker, possibly a visible minority, getting a call from the government asking if you went to sick with COVID-19. I feel like a lot of people might be inclined to lie. So as alarming as that survey result is, I think that it probably understates things. But to your question, of who makes the call. The short version is that for almost all workers, labor conditions are a provincial responsibility, and that's true in all provinces in Canada. So if you live and work in Ontario, you are almost certainly subject to Ontario's labor laws, specifically the Employment Standards Act. So just as for example, you know, a decision on how high the minimum wage should be is a decision that is made at Queen's Park. And if the provincial government wants to or does not want to extend paid sick leave to workers, that is entirely the provincial government's decision, and the feds can't really do that much about it.
McGrath, how well do I know you?
Pretty well at this point.
Pretty well at this point is the correct answer. So why do I have a sense that that's not the full and complete McGrathian answer that you need to give here?
I do have a bit of a longer answer, and that
is... No kidding.
There is a smaller share of the Canadian workforce that is regulated by the federal government. And so these are areas that are federal jurisdiction, things like banks, railroads. Most broadcasters are federally regulated, but TVO is a provincial crown corporation. So as far as labor goes, we are not. For those workers, the federal government could, in fact, pass a law and mandate 10 days of paid sick leave as a labor standard by amending a federal law. This would be the cousin to Ontario's Employment Standards Act, is the Canada Labor Code. So in this whole debate between Ottawa and the provinces, it's worth noting that the feds actually haven't done this. They haven't amended the Canada Labor Code. I double-checked the law and the federal government's own website this morning. And, you know, formally speaking, Justin Trudeau and Doug Ford are actually on the same page here in their respective spheres of jurisdiction. They basically both say, no, we're not going to extend paid sick leave as a statutory entitlement under the law. But if you want, you can apply for the CRSB.
So on the one hand, we've got the federal government saying to Ontario that the CSRB and paid sick leave are two great tastes that taste great together. But so far, they haven't extended paid sick leave to the workers that they regulate either.
You know, it's a detail that has kind of flown under the radar in all this. But yeah, that's the long and short of it, rather. I think not for the first time in COVID-19, we are saying that some of the partisan judgments that people want to make about the pandemic and the government's response to it are getting kind of scrambled.
This is one of the things I suspect. I mean, I know it's a great Canadian tradition of the province blaming the feds and the feds blaming the provinces and the public, you know, just scratching their heads because they don't know what to do. But I think this is the kind of stuff that makes people crazy. I mean, there's something that needs doing here. They're both pointing at each other and nobody's doing anything.
Well, I mean, do we want to get into the emergency head of power? I didn't write this into the script because I thought Katie would hit me. But I mean, in theory, the federal parliament does have emergency powers. And I very sincerely want to say I don't think anybody would ever actually do this. But in theory, the Constitution does give the federal parliament power to legislate in areas of provincial jurisdiction in emergencies. And so you could make the argument that really the ultimate decider here is Justin Trudeau. If he thinks he can get paid sick leave as a national, you know, work condition through the current parliament, he could try that for a bunch of reasons, including the fact that I think some provinces might vote to secede. He is not doing that. But, you know, it is a constitutional possibility.
And finally, JMM, do you mind if I take us down a little stroll down memory lane for a moment here? Will you indulge me?
Well, you didn't interrupt me when I was talking about the emergency powers, so I feel like I owe you.
Thank you. You're a great Canadian. Well, for those of us who have followed hashtag OnPoly, as we call it, Ontario politics, for many years, this is actually a pretty big week because it was 50 years ago this week, February 12th, 1971, that a little over 1,600 delegates gathered at Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto to choose the successor to Premier John Robarts, who was retiring, not just, of course, as the Premier, but also as leader of the PC Party. It was a very close contest. It was a very bizarre contest. Do you mind if I just handicap it all for a second here?
Oh, please go ahead.
Okay. The main contenders were, and I suspect you've heard of some of them, the main contenders were Bill Davis, who was the Minister of Education from Brampton, Alan Lawrence, who, yes, as a conservative, represented a riding in downtown Toronto, and yet was the Minister of Mines, figure that one out. Darcy McHugh, who's still around, just celebrated his 88th birthday, and he's going to be on the podcast actually in a couple of weeks. He was the Municipal Affairs Minister from the Southwestern Ontario riding of Chatham-Kent. And Bob Welsh, who was the Citizenship Minister from St. Catharines. They were the four top contenders. Bill Davis, though, really was the very heavy favorite. He had the most cabinet support. He had the most caucus support. He was the Education, Colleges, and Universities Minister, which means, how do I put this? Those portfolios were like Health Today. They had all the money, right? They're building new schools, new colleges, new universities all the time. So Bill Davis's portfolio, he was traveling all over Ontario, spending lots of money, building new schools, opening up new colleges, and more importantly, making political contacts at the time. Okay, so they gather at the gardens, and the Tories are so excited because they're going to try out these newfangled, state-of-the-art voting machines. No more paper ballots. They've got these fabulous new voting machines, and I think they've got something like 18 of them, and they explain to all the delegates how they work, and yet somehow 15 of the 18 machines broke down. It caused a six-hour delay in voting, which would turn out to be hugely important, because as the afternoon progressed and into the evening, then a blizzard hit Toronto. And the people who had come from far away, read Northern Ontario, thought, I'm never going to get my last flight out or my bus home if I don't leave now. And about 40 of them left. And that was just enough damage for poor Alan Lawrence, because on the fourth ballot, remember, we've had a big delay. On the fourth ballot at 2 o'clock in the morning, Bill Davis, 812, Alan Lawrence, 768. The big colossus who was supposed to win this thing going away, Bill Davis, he won by 44 votes on the fourth ballot. And 25 years ago, I did an interview with Mr. Davis. The occasion then, of course, was the 25th anniversary of his convention victory. And we talked about the narrow margin of his win.
Was it 44 votes you won that convention by?
44 votes.
44 votes, which is pretty close in hindsight, you know.
In foresight, it was pretty close. In any sight, it's quite close.
It was, and four might have been his lucky number, because he won on the fourth ballot by 44 votes. He went on to serve 14 years as Premier of Ontario, and he won four straight elections, and there's a four in every single one of those numbers. How about that?
You know, people, even people who are in politics, you know, like to think that if you're smart enough and if you've got enough money and if you work hard enough, you can control all the variables and you can guarantee a win, or at least sometimes they talk like that. But honestly, you know, you can't control a snowstorm hitting Toronto and all of your delegates leaving. It's just one of those things that is unpredictable and frankly, a lot of fun about politics. I have to ask, Steve, are there any other delightful little factoids that you would like to lay on us before we close this thing off?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. A couple of little things I'd like to add. Number one, I spoke to Mr. Davis about all this about a week ago, and he assured me that the blizzard was part of his campaign plan, and it unfolded just as he'd planned. And the second thing was, there was a delegate at that convention who was supporting Alan Lawrence, the guy who ultimately came second, and he was a high school student at the time. So he was part of the youth team for Lawrence. And I guess all these years, the story can be told, that high school student who would go on to become the chief of staff to Bill Davis, and Mr. Davis almost treats him like he's a sixth child. He's the current mayor of Toronto today. And let me tell you something, Bill Davis never lets John Tory forget about the fact that he showed up at that convention and was backing his opponent. What do you think of that?
Steve, that might just be a perfect little nugget of a Toronto story. I like that.
There you go. It's all yours. Repeat it at leisure.
We always conclude this podcast with our favorite quotes of the week, and we will have that for you immediately after we ask you for your feedback. Leave us a review or email us at onpolitics@tvo.org. It helps make our little podcast that much better.
Okay, off to our quotes of the week now, and here's mine, and I am going to go back to Ontario's 18th Premier, Bill Davis, on this, the occasion of the 50th anniversary of his 1971 PC Leadership Convention victory. Here's a quote on what motivated Mr. Davis to do what he did for almost 14 years, making him the second longest serving Premier of Ontario ever.
I hope there's some understanding that leaders of government are faced with complex issues where decisions are made in spite of the cynics, on the basis of a level of conscience really trying to determine, in essence, what they believe is the right thing to do.
Bill Davis from many decades ago. Mr. Davis is now 91 and a half years old, still living on Main Street in Brampton. And if you want more on this story, because we just didn't leave you enough of those kooky little nuggets about 50 years ago, go to our website, tvo.org, where later this week on February 11th, I've got a column with many more stories and lots more fun. And you'll find a link to that in our show notes.
And my quote of the week is from the current Premier, Doug Ford, who thanked an Ontario resident on Monday of this week for giving him a Toronto Maple Leafs-themed face mask.
Thank you, Anna, for this mask, because my buddy Brendan Shanahan, he's tight as skin on a grape. He wouldn't even give me one of these masks, so I had to get it off someone. I can always bust his chops. He's great.
That is Premier Ford speaking in his usual colloquial style at Queen's Park this week. And Steve, I'm not going to lie, I had to Google who Brendan Shanahan is.
Come on. Come on. Don't. I did not just hear that. I did not just hear that.
I'm sorry, Steve. I just, you know, I don't know all these things.
Every time I think you're making such great strides, you just disappoint the hell out of me. What am I going to say, McGrath? Well, that was episode 98 of the On Poly podcast, produced by Katie O'Connor, edited by Matthew O'Mara, production support from Nikki Ashworth and Jonathan Halliwell, and not the head of MLSE, Brendan Shanahan. JMM, as my dad likes to say, stay positive, test negative.
Stay safe, Steve.